It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to The Lars Larson Show. That was the horrific sound of the murder of five people and the 40 who were injured at a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin last night. And this is the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to a Monday. We don't usually expect to have a Monday like this one. And I do promise to get to your calls just a bit later at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. We call this the best conversation in talk journalism. That's got an upbeat tone to it. This is a horror that didn't have to happen, and most of it is due to the actions of government. I'm going to make that case in a moment, but on this Monday, welcome to the program, and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the last 21 years, and I'm always glad to take your calls. If you want to email, it's talk@LarsLarson.com. If you want to vote in our Twitter poll, you can go to @LarsLarsonShow or to our website at LarsLarson.com. But on this Monday, as we confront the horror of an attack on an all-American tradition in that community of Waukesha, Wisconsin, listen to the mayor of that town talking about what this town has done for the last two-thirds of a century.
Waukesha has held what can be described as a Norman Rockwell type of Christmas parade for almost six decades. Last night, our wonderful Waukesha parade became the scene of a horrific tragedy. Last night, that parade became a nightmare. Last night, many were severely injured. Last night, lives were lost during the middle of what should have been a celebration.
And I have a warning for you. This kind of thing, and it's something that my friend Ted Nugent calls engineered recidivism. It's a term that he coined not too long ago, but he calls it engineered recidivism. And you might wonder, well, Lars, what the heck is that? Where the people we have put in charge of police, of prosecution, of the courts, of the prisons, of the jails, have made a decision without our say-so to let criminals out of custody, to let inmates, convicted criminals, out of prison, that they want to, where it already hasn't been eliminated, they want to eliminate cash bail. That is, you're accused of one crime, and in many cases, in this case, very, very serious crimes, and they simply let you out so you can commit even more crimes. What happened in Waukesha, Wisconsin, could happen in almost any community in America because too many of those people who now head up city councils, county commissions, the district attorney or prosecutor's office, they've decided we don't like the system that was created by the laws created by the representatives of the people. We don't like it, but we can't get the people to change it, so we're just going to let people go free where they can go out and commit mayhem like happened in that community last night. At this point, the best information is that the accused killer, and I'll talk more about him in just a moment, was let out of jail last week. He was in for serious charges, and he got out on a paltry $1,000 in total bail. And the guy who let him out, the district attorney, is now trying to cover his backside as fast as he possibly can, saying, well, that was too low. Except that that DA, like many of them elected with the help of billionaire George Soros, have been advocating for no bail at all. The Waukesha police chief, Dan Thompson, explained that even the best efforts to barricade off streets to keep that Christmas parade safe didn't seem to do any good at all. Listen to this.
I'll tell you this, we actually had a squad in barricades up, and he drove right through the barricades and the officers. When the officers tried to engage and stop the threat, he still continued through the crowd.
Now, the authorities have identified a guy by the name of Daryl Brooks Jr., 39. He was the man who is being accused of five counts of what they call in Wisconsin homicide, what other states call murder. Five counts of murder for driving an SUV through a Christmas parade in Waukesha, leaving at least five dead, and that number may go up, and more than 40 people injured sent to the hospital. So he drives right through this parade. Listen to one of the witnesses who saw it happen last night.
I didn't get any sleep last night. I kept replaying what I witnessed and what could have potentially happened to myself and my children.
All of a sudden, I heard screams and chaos coming from my right. And that caught my attention. I looked over and I saw an SUV coming towards us relatively quickly, and I knew that wasn't part of the parade, and I knew something was wrong.
Yeah, something was wrong that night. But I'm pointing out that the problem was created by the people in charge of our courts and our cops, of jails and prisons. The court records today, and we will know more about this later, but we already know that Daryl Brooks, this 39-year-old man, had two open criminal cases in Milwaukee County. On November the 5th, he was charged with resisting or obstructing an officer, reckless homicide, not connected to last night, reckless homicide from a prior incident. He was charged with disorderly conduct. He was charged with jumping bail, and he was also charged with battery. That apparently had to do with a domestic dispute of some kind. But you would think, if this guy's already jumped bail once and he's accused of serious violent crimes, what in the world are you doing letting him out of jail? I'd also point out that Daryl Brooks is an aspiring rap artist in addition to his criminal career. He did a video for one rap that actually features the red SUV that killed so many people at that Christmas parade yesterday. Listen up, just part of it that's clean enough to play.
I just got a load worth about a half a ticket. 30 in the blicker when I'm out here chasing chicken. Was observing to the game when I used to play the benches. Now I swipe Da Vinci, got him looking at me different. I can't miss him, yeah. AR with a stenching, yeah. Venom when I kiss him, yeah. Kidnap you and missus, yeah. Work all in the kitchen, damn. Money by the ceiling fan. Shorty wanna take a chance, I'ma need a cash advance.
Yeah, that was the part we could actually play for you. Too many swear words and too many uses of the N-word in there to play any more of it. He has multiple pending cases in Milwaukee County, second-degree reckless endangerment, being a felon in possession of a firearm, and yet it was easy for him to bail out. All of that because the DA of Milwaukee County, like so many DAs around America right now, elected by liberals, have decided they don't want to hold people in custody. And as of today, the Milwaukee County DA's office has sent out a letter. And you could cover, you could call this a CYA. The DA is trying to cover his backside, saying, oh, we made a mistake. And he sent out this letter, an internal review of his decision. He says the most recent case against Daryl Brooks was inappropriately charged. The state made a cash bail request, in this case, of $1,000. The defendant posted the $1,000 on November 11th, resulting in his release from custody. And they now say the state's bail recommendation was inappropriately low. Let me tell you, Milwaukee County and the town of Waukesha are not the only places where this is happening. It is happening in our communities. And you are seeing elected DAs and prosecutors letting people out on either zero bail or so close to zero that it really doesn't make a practical difference. And this is what is going to be the result. People are going to die. People are going to get hurt because the people in charge have decided you don't deserve protection from those criminals. Coming up, the Kyle Rittenhouse decision on Friday, the young man who fired in self-defense, but it inspired a riot in just one American city. I'll talk about that.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Well, leave it to Portlandia to see the only post-Rittenhouse riot anywhere in the United States of America. I mean, that is what the city of riots has become known for, isn't it? And why not? Mayor Feckless Ted Wheeler and his cop-hating city council, most especially Joanne Hardesty, she hates the cops more than anyone. They have defunded millions of dollars from the police, and they've tied the hands of the cops, too, restricting what they can do with violent crowds. So last Friday night, after a jury of 12 decided in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that Kyle Rittenhouse had committed no crime because when he shot three people, they were attacking him. He fired in self-defense, just as we knew about a year and a half ago. Portland City Council and the mayor publicly disparaged the decision as unjust. And what happened then? 200 people showed up in Portland to attack the Justice Center, a symbol of the government that had just endorsed their anger over the verdict. Now, isn't that kind of a predictable response? They declared their intent to burn the place down. And big surprise, at the end of it all, the police issued, get this, 5 tickets and 17 warnings, and they only arrested one guy, and they only arrested him because he had an outstanding warrant for some other case. You get the message? The Portland city government has the same disturbing relationship with Antifa and BLM thugs that you sometimes see in very sick couples. No matter how many times the rioters beat the city up, Portlandia, she never fights back, and she always comes back for more. Alan Painter writes in with a related email. Lars is not rocket scientist. Arrest those criminals throwing stuff at the police officers and trying to light fires. Even if you're just hanging with that group, they're there doing criminal activities. You should be arrested. Hold their butts in jail until they come up with restitution for the damage done and set a court date to face a judge. Of course, District Attorney Michael Schmidt will do nothing. He'll do exactly doing nothing. These little thugs need to be held accountable. A great example of everybody gets a trophy era. Oops, maybe that was a mistake. In Barbados, they take little punks like that into the public square and spank them publicly. Second-time offenders, they take the kid and his dad to the public square. They don't get a third-time offender, something Portland maybe should check into. Signed, Alan Painter. And on Getter, Alan says the owner of our favorite, a different Alan, says the owner of our favorite Chinese restaurant tells us of the possible closing of his business. His reasons? The cost of supplies are rising faster than what many of his customers are willing to pay, along with the secondary problem, he's unable to hire any help. And our question of the day comes in from Wayne in Silverton. Lars, I'm not seeing the seer Joe was talking about in the parade crasher. Why is this different? A rapper with a rap sheet is a problem? No inclusion here? Watching him squint, he's talking about Biden, reading the BS teleprompter about how he recovered the economy while many just went back to work and the millions just laying back are not tabulated. What a hero, signed Wayne. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, today's Daily Grill, I'm going to give to everybody involved in the marijuana legalization process. And before you say, oh, Lars, we're so tired of hearing about your anti-marijuana stuff. Look, I accept that when the public went to the polls and they voted in favor of marijuana legalization, I said, okay, that's the choice of the public. I'll respect the fact that the public has the right to change the law. Although you might ask people in Washington state about how many times they've tried to change laws and how when the government doesn't want the law to change, they just simply take it to the courts and they say, you people, you voters, you have no right to change things. But I warned at the time of marijuana legalization that this was going to make a major problem with illegal drugs. And I heard many people say to me, Lars, no, if we legalize pot, we're going to drive all of the criminal element out of that business. Well, consider this. The Oregon State Police announced over the weekend they have now seized in a single bust 500,000 pounds of processed marijuana. In the latest large-scale bust, this one happened in Southern Oregon, troopers served a warrant on 5 industrial-sized warehouses that were zoned for commercial use in a town called White City. That's not far from Medford. Over the course of 2 days, officers seized roughly 500,000 pounds of processed marijuana. Their estimate on its value, $500 million, seized by the Oregon State Police, and they also seized one gun. The amount was described by the state police as truly epic. Now, I want you to consider this. If you voted for marijuana legalization, believing that if you did that, that number one, the state would make a lot of money on marijuana. It does make millions, but in a state budget of about $70 billion, it is a drop in the bucket. Secondly, we were told that this would free up the police. They'd have more time to focus on other more serious crimes because they wouldn't be arresting, prosecuting, and putting into prison people for marijuana crimes. The truth of the matter was that at the time of legalization, nobody except the major dealers were going to prison. The things you could go to prison for were dealing in quantities like 500,000 pounds of pot, you can still go to prison for that when you do it illegally. You can also go to prison if you sell pot to kids. But that's all we were doing. I think at the time there were 14,000 inmates in the Oregon State Prison. There were a dozen in there for something that had anything to do with pot. So that was not a major problem. So now that they've done this, the Mexican drug cartels have moved in. They use human slavery. And the fact is we have an even bigger illegal problem because of marijuana now than we did before legalization. And I'd be glad to take the naysayer call on that. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day. And on this Monday on the Radio Northwest Network, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And today's email of the day so far, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest. Now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus. Online at rivercityusa.com/careers. Andy writes in, Lars, about your debate on Friday, we featured a debate between a Democrat and a Republican candidate who are both running for the seat in Congress currently held by Rhino Republican Jaime Herrera Butler. It was eye-opening for me to hear a Democrat, Brent, say out loud what he thought on the issues. No way he'd ever sway me to his position on his opinions of the facts, but hearing an actual Democrat say what he actually thought was, well, amazing. Honestly, it leaves me shaking my head. A lot of deny, obfuscate, sidestep, and pure nonsense. Show me where the government has the right to mandate. Great response, Lars. And Republican Joe Kent's responses were right on point. He is by far the best choice to take over Jaime Herrera Butler's spot. Thanks for the show, and we'll be well done on the debate questions. Thank you very much for that. Coming up, I'll get to your phone calls and your emails. And Joe Biden has a few thoughts on how all of us are so much better off this year than we were last year. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. You know, one interesting little detail from the Waukesha incident, I told you that Mr. Brooks had quite a number of other crimes that he's either been convicted of or he is accused of. The one of the crimes he was accused of, on which he was free on $1,000 bail and then drove through the crowd last night in Waukesha and is accused of now killing at least five and sending 40 people to the hospital. Let me read this from none other than the left-wing New York Times. Mr. Brooks has been free on $1,000 bail in an earlier criminal case in which he was accused of running over the mother of his child in the parking lot of a Milwaukee gas station with his Ford Escape earlier this month. A spokesman for the district attorney's office described the state's bail recommendation as inappropriately low. No kidding. But can you imagine? This guy has a background in which he's accused of running down the mother of his child in a parking lot with a car, and now he is accused of running down and killing five and sending 40 more to the hospital. He seems to have a thing about using a vehicle as a weapon. Now to your calls. Let's go first to, I'll tell you what, hold that thought, Aaron. When I have two naysayers, which one do I go to first? Let's go to Robert. Robert, thanks for listening in Seattle on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. What do you and I disagree about today?
That marijuana thing down outside of Medford, I believe that might be, you know, some American citizens that are just trying to cash in on the marijuana market.
And, it could be.
I totally support the legalization of marijuana, and here's why. I'm a truck driver, but for 20 years I spent in prison behind 33 aggravated robberies in four different states. In all the prisons that I've been in, I'm going to tell you what, I have never seen a man smoke weed and then go get a shank and come out of his cell and stab somebody. On the other hand, I've seen where somebody's getting drunk on alcohol and committing all kinds of violence. You know, marijuana is a drug that doesn't enhance somebody's, let's say, aggressive behavior.
Okay, can I offer one case in point? Do you know who Do you know who Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri was, who inspired and it was based on a lie, the hands up, don't shoot movement that has now inspired BLM? Do you know who he was?
Exactly. Yeah.
No, do you know who he was?
I don't know him personally, no.
He got shot to death by the cops because he not once but twice attacked a cop. Do you know what he was on at the time when he attacked the cop?
Are you asking me what the media says he was on? Okay.
No, I'm going to tell you what four different autopsies, one done by the family, one done by the AG's office, one done by the district attorney's office, and I think there was a fourth one done by another group. There were four different autopsies that show he was high on pot at the time he attacked that cop. So, Robert, I think your idea that if we were all sufficiently doped up, that somehow it'd be a much more civilized society. But it's an interesting naysayer argument. Let's go to Aaron. Hey, Aaron, what do you and I disagree about today?
Yeah, kind of on that last lady, I kind of agree with her, but the same, I see more dispensaries in Oregon now than Starbucks. And I have personal friends that have a lot of jobs. I think the amount of jobs and all, I think it's brought a lot of good things to the state. And I think the negatives, there are a couple things, but I think most of the things are positive.
Do you think having the Mexican drug cartels doing business here and engaging in human slavery, using human slaves to run their marijuana plantations, and the amount of money involved, $500 million, do you think that an awful lot of criminals would kill you over $500,000, let alone $500 million?
Now, do you know for sure if those are the cartels or are those just people?
I don't know on that one. I know that the vast majority of the illegal pot plantations in Southern Oregon, having had sheriffs on from that area, are run by the Mexican drug cartels. Now, whether this one was or not, I don't know.
Yeah, on this one, I don't believe that it is. I do agree that there are...
How do you know? No, but how would you know?
Because I know personal people that grow marijuana in Southern Oregon, and they grow it.
They grow $500 million worth?
That is a big bust, and that could have been from the cartel. Overall, I think that most of the operations are done legally, and
Aaron, I'm not talking about the legal ones. I'm saying that having the legal ones and the law has opened up the door for the illegal ones to a much greater extent. What kind of horsepower do you think it takes to distribute 500,000 pounds of pot?
Well, there's a lot of money in it, but I think a lot of our resources as far as the police can go into more illegal drugs.
That's not what I asked you. Aaron, if I gave you 500,000 pounds of pot, how would you go about selling it?
I would not know how to sell that legally. I would not.
Would a major league criminal organization know how to distribute 500,000 pounds of pot?
Yeah, probably
okay,
more
so,
in other states
so do
rather
you
than
think
just
my,
Oregon, though.
Do you think my suspicion that maybe this was done by a major criminal organization, because it's one thing to grow 500,000 pounds of pot and lease out industrial-sized buildings and maintain the workforce and then maintain the security so nobody finds out what you're doing. It's something else to try and figure out what do you do with it once you've got 500,000 pounds of pot. I think that suggests the involvement of a major criminal organization, don't you?
Yeah, well, I guess we'll have to see on that one if it was the cartel or not. But
okay, but you're getting all focused on whether or not it's the cartel. Let's just say that if somebody has leased out industrial-sized buildings and grown 500,000 pounds of something, and they think they have the ability to distribute it in some way and make money from it, that is a major league criminal organization. Would you agree?
Well, do you see how many dispensaries there are? There's a lot of people that
those
are
all for the legal product. Those are all for the legal product. But my question then is
maybe some of that got mixed in with the legal marijuana. Maybe about half of that was getting mixed in.
Well, and you're saying might have. The state police in Oregon did a report a couple of years ago that Kate Brown did her best to bury where nobody would see it, that estimates that $1 billion worth of illegal pot at that time, a couple of years ago, was leaving the state. Now, can you imagine a criminal organization big enough to distribute $1 billion worth of pot?
No, that seems like quite a bit.
Yeah, and do you think that an organization like that, if they want to protect their operation, if you get in the way, do you think they might just run right over you?
Yeah, well, and we do need to put more effort into making sure that those kind of operations aren't going on in Oregon. I'm
And how would you do that?
Well, That's the part where I'm not pro police on most things, but that's where I do think our police officers should be probably looking more into the cartels.
Well, you're just throwing out red meat right and left. Aaron, what are you not pro police on then? Do you want the police, if you call them at 2 a.m. because somebody's attacking you or your girlfriend, do you want them to come?
Of course.
Do you want, okay.
Absolutely.
Then what
absolutely,
are you not pro police on?
I don't want them to hassle me when I'm on my way to work. When I'm doing nothing illegally, me and my friends have been hassled by the police when we were doing absolutely nothing wrong.
Can you tell me the last time, the last or the most notable time when the police hassled you? What did they hassle you about?
I drank too much at the bar and my buddy drove home sober.
Yeah.
He drove me home sober. He got pulled over and they hassled us and he was dead sober and they hassled us both for about an hour and a half before they towed my truck. And after he made an illegal U-turn, but they towed my truck, so they thought we had drugs or something in the car. They found nothing. He has his license, and they still towed my truck, and I couldn't go to work the next day, even though I called somebody to get the proper sober drive.
Okay, fair enough. Aaron, thanks very much. Good example. I'd love to know the other details behind that one. In any case, glad to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. It's a Monday. A terrible day for this country as we consider the idea that prosecutors who let criminals out so they can go out and kill more people. And does that make sense to anybody out there? I'd love to hear the naysayer on that. Coming up in a moment, one state is now here in the Pacific Northwest trying to recruit a lot of the unvaccinated cops who've been fired by Oregon and Washington. We'll talk about that, and I'll get to your calls in a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls. Our Twitter poll today, should Northwest prisons, Northwest states, house transgender men who are criminals in women's prisons? Now, before that puts a picture in your mind of what could possibly go wrong with that crazy idea, let me point this out. National Review reports a serial killer whose victims were all women and a registered sex offender who raped a female minor before transitioning were among the 6 male criminals who were transferred to the state prison. Prisoner Donna Perry, known as Douglas Perry, convicted of killing 3 sex workers before being charged. Perry reportedly traveled to Thailand to undergo gender reassignment surgery. Prosecutors argued in court that Perry had the procedures done to avoid suspicion for the murders he committed. Another inmate, and this is the name of the inmate, Princess Zoe Marie Andromeda Love, formerly known as Hobby Bingman, had been sentenced to jail time after he was found guilty of having sex with a 12-year-old girl. After claiming to be a woman, Andromeda Love successfully transferred to a women's prison in Washington State. On one of the days on the job, a fellow officer told him she discovered Andromeda Love and a developmentally disabled female inmate in bed together with no clothes on. That woman, Heather Leanne Trent, is a victim of sexual assault and had been housed in the prison's mental health unit. She had the disposition of a young child, and she was being taken advantage of. That one doesn't make any sense. Should Northwest states house transgender men who are criminals in the women's prison? I would say no. You can vote any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. To your calls now. Let's go first to Matt in Mercer Island. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks. Hey, listen, back to the Rittenhouse verdict, and I know
sure.
The defense got him off, did a great job for our side, but man, when the prosecution put the one policeman up and he didn't say what they wanted him to say, they found a cop that would, right?
Yep.
They did. I wish the defense, this is just thinking out loud here, I wish the defense would have asked both cops if they were familiar with the term, what is suicide by cop? And then they would have had to answer. And then they would have had to say, now, do you believe what Kyle Rittenhouse did when a loaded gun was pointed his way was right or not? Then that second cop would have had to, you know what I'm saying? I think we need to keep this type of stuff in our front hip pocket, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying. In this case, I just know Kyle Rittenhouse had a right to be in that community or any community he chose to go to. And that became one of the big issues in the trial was, well, why were you there? And he says, you don't live there. And he said, my dad lives there. And as far as I'm concerned, Matt, you have a right to go to Seattle. You may live at Mercer Island. You have a right to go to Seattle. You have a right to go to Portland. You can go to Eugene or the Tri-Cities or Spokane. I can do the same. And yet the issue became, why were you in that town? As though you, I guess, need a passport or something to go from one town to another town. I think there are a lot of towns that a lot of us consider our community. And if your community comes under attack, is the presence of law-abiding citizens likely to deter those kinds of criminal activities? And I think they do.
Thanks, Lars.
You bet. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Sharon. Hey, Sharon, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on a Monday. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Sharon, hello. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi, I was calling because I am wondering how the cops down in White City are determining the value of that cannabis. When I looked at the pictures and the weight, right, it looked to me as it was unprocessed, and it looked to me that was outdoor. Me being
a lot of it was processed, Sharon. But I mean, the way we used to do it as reporters, you'd talk to the prosecutors, you say, "How much is a pound of marijuana worth?" That's 16 ounces. I know that a lot of commercial shops sell an ounce for as cheap as say 70 or 80 bucks. But if you have 16 ounces of something that's worth, even 80 bucks, that's going to be north of $1,000 a pound. And the math is then easy. If you have 500,000 pounds multiplied by $1,000, you're at 500 million. Is that really the concern you've got, is how they set the value?
My concern is looking at the photos, given the market. Now, I'm a grower. I'm a legal grower on the recreational side. I know what I get for my cannabis as an indoor grower.
How much an ounce do you get for your cannabis?
I sell mine by the pound because I'm wholesale. I sell my stuff for $1,700 a pound.
That means it's well north of $1,000 a pound, right?
Right. But now looking at the market and looking at everything that they have, their cannabis that they're selling there, that would be outdoor. I'm assuming it's cartel run, right? It's a huge thing.
I'm guessing. Or some other major criminal enterprise to handle that kind of weight.
Correct.
But you're assuming you sell here. Most of these people are growing it illegally or selling it elsewhere in America where a pound goes for a lot more.
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at it as, you know, given my experience in the marketplace, that's about $200 a pound weed, whether you're selling it on the illegal market or the legal market.
But how they're really determining the value of this, Sharon, here or elsewhere?
I would say most of the United States, really, given the quality of what they were showing in the paper, honestly, that's, I don't really think anything that anybody actually particularly would want to ingest unless they were desperate. It didn't look very good.
When people are buying illegal stuff, they often don't look as closely at the quality. But Sharon, thanks for the dealer viewpoint on that. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on this Monday, and I'm always glad to get your phone calls and your emails. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, in which we endeavor to try to serve the states of the Pacific Northwest as we have for 21 years. And we're glad to get to your calls. I'll do that just a bit later. But I always like to reach out to professionals who have some expertise in a subject. And I reached out to Tung Yin, who's a law school professor at Lewis and Clark Law School, or Northwestern School of Law at Lewis and Clark. Professor, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I want to ask you about this. Over the weekend, this horrific incident in which a man appeared to deliberately run people down during a Christmas parade. I think we're going to have a debate about that. Although I would point out that the man bailed out of jail on $1,000 bail, which is an issue I want to ask you about. And one of the charges he was up for was having driven an automobile over the mother of his child. And so he has some prior experience in driving automobiles over people. So when he drove down that parade route, we were told he's just trying to escape from another situation he found himself in after he bailed out of jail. And maybe it was unintentional that he was just driving through people to try and get away from the police. I don't believe that. But I want to ask you about the more important issue, which I think extends to every corner of the United States. There has been a move recently to eliminate bail. They call it eliminating cash bail, but what they mean is when someone is accused of a serious crime, they're typically ordered to pay some bail or they're not going to be released. This guy was up for some fairly serious crimes before what he's accused of doing on Sunday night, and he was allowed out on $1,000 bail, so low that even the DA's office that made that happen is now saying, well, we think the bail was a little too low. Yeah, except they're doing this after the fact in what appears to be a CYA. So with that whole mess of issues, Professor, can you jump right into it for me and tell me, is this the right thing to do for all these cities and all these counties and all these states to be talking about letting more criminals out on either dramatically reduced or zero bail?
Well, I guess just to quibble a little bit, technically, since they're innocent until proven guilty, they're not criminals. They're only people accused of crime.
Okay, accused criminals. Fair enough.
But I think that we have some different issues here. One is, what is the general purpose of cash bail? And the primary purpose is to set it in an amount so that the person will have an incentive to show up for the trial and not flee the jurisdiction. The separate issue about protecting the community relates to whether no bail should be allowed and instead the person should be held in pretrial detention. So in some senses, what we used to do before the Supreme Court said you could do pretrial detention, judges would just set the bail so high that the accused could not possibly meet the bail amount and hence would have to stay in pretrial detention. I think once we separate out the two, the concern you're raising about is this somebody who, although they have not been convicted of a crime yet, that there are enough reasons to think that they pose such danger to the community that they should be detained pending trial. That should really be handled through pretrial detention, for which we do have fairly robust due process. The person obviously is entitled to an attorney. The standard of proof is, it's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, because that's the trial, of course. But it's not preponderance of the evidence, which is the civil standard. It's typically clear and convincing evidence, which is somewhere in between those two. So it's a fairly high threshold. So that's really what I think that should be the process for people who are accused of violent crimes, where there are significant concerns that they may commit further crimes of violence against the community.
I think they haven't finished the process yet with Mr. Brooks, but I've been told that as of today, Wisconsin is recommending that he be charged with 5 counts of what is called murder everywhere else, but in Wisconsin, as we found out during the Rittenhouse trial, is called homicide, which is weird because homicide just means man death or death by the hands of man. In most cases, it's called murder, but it's the equivalent in Wisconsin. This guy, though, was allowed out last week on $1,000 bail. Some of the prior offenses he'd committed were felon in possession of, he had a felony on his record. He was accused of felon in possession of a firearm. He was also accused of jumping bail. And so when you're considering somebody who's already jumped bail once, wouldn't you think you'd have a much higher bail the second time to make sure that he actually shows up?
I would think so. That's a question that one might pose to the judge who assessed the bail amount.
What's the advantage to what's being known as the no cash bail movement that has been, they've used it in New York. They let a lot of accused criminals who often have criminal records already, but they are now accused of new things, and they let them out. And in some cases, they go out, and while they're on bail, they commit more crimes and hurt more people. Is there any real productive purpose to saying we ought to get down to either zero bail or very low bails?
Well, the concern about bail amounts is that can you calibrate it enough that you do not overburden the poor and the indigent? And what happens if you set the bail too high, higher than necessary, let's say, is that the person can't bail out. And there are studies that show that people who are in pretrial detention are more likely to plead guilty. They also have a tougher time assisting in their own defense. And so it generally degrades the ability of the person to defend themselves. And in fact, the concern that many civil libertarians have about plea bargaining, people tend to think that the concern is that they'll be charged with something really heavy and the prosecutor will offer a lighter charge and the person will be induced to plead guilty. But that's actually not really where we see people who are more likely to be factually innocent who plead guilty. The people who are more likely to plead guilty, even though they honestly don't think they committed the crimes, are those who are sitting in pretrial detention. Well, let's say that they fail to make bail on relatively trivial crimes where the amount of time they would be sentenced to is less than what they've already served in waiting for trial. So their choice is wait for trial, and if they're acquitted, they go free weeks down the road, or they plead guilty today and they go free today. So that's at least, I think, the argument, if not for eliminating cash bail, for at least taking a very serious look at what is required in cash bail and whether it is too much for indigent or poor people to come up with.
You know, Professor, as you were describing that, I almost got this picture in my mind. Professor Tung Yin is talking about the people who've been held without bail in Washington, D.C. because of the incidents of January 6th, but I'm reasonably sure you weren't referring to them.
That could be another class of people. Again, you know, we try to be consistent in how we apply the law without regard to what one thinks about the particular crimes in question.
Professor, it's a pleasure. Thanks so very much. That's Professor Tung Yin, who's a law school professor from Northwestern School of Law at Lewis and Clark College. I'll get back to your phone calls. And coming up, I'm going to talk to a former prosecutor about his take on what has happened in Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is a policy that's being pushed in many places around the United States and here in the Pacific Northwest. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We got a couple of big law enforcement issues that are right in front of us right now. Of course, what happened in Waukesha last night, that horrific crime. But there's another one that's going on right now. And I thought I'd talk to one of the toughest DAs I've ever known. He's now retired. We used to call him Stormin' Norm Frank. How are you doing, Norm?
Good afternoon, Lars.
Afternoon. I have a question for you about a report, and it's a subject that I don't think the mainstream media is going to touch very much, and it has to do with transgender inmates. And it turns out that an awful lot of the transgender inmates, there aren't that many to begin with, but the ones that are sent to prison are ending up as biological males housed with females. And you can imagine the kind of problems that that might create, and it turns out it is creating problems behind bars. But since here in the Pacific Northwest, we have an awful lot of very woke folks as governors, and you know they appoint all the folks who run the Department of Corrections, they don't want to talk about that problem very much at all. They tend to bury it as much as they possibly can. I'd like your insights on that.
Well, I'm not an expert in corrections, but and I hadn't heard that, but I have no problem understanding the type of problems that creates. I mean, when they went to a number of years ago, the state paying for this gender reassignment surgery, I mean, it was just an invitation to abuse. And, you know, it's I think whether they're convicts or not, you know, obviously these people deserve, if it's real rather than faked, they deserve consideration and understanding. But that's different from turning over the keys to the whole process to them.
Well, and I'd point this out. Apparently, the standard that's been adopted is that whether you've had the surgery or not, if you insist you're a biological male and you insist that you're female, you can then say, and I insist that I be housed with the women, even though I'm still biologically a man. And one case out of Washington State involving somebody who changed his or her name, depending on what your point of view and what you think about pronouns, was originally a person by the name of Hobby Bingham, who is now known as Princess Zoe Marie Andromeda Love, was sent to jail for having sex with a 12-year-old girl. You know, that was the crime, and then ends up housed with the women. And guess what? They find this inmate with a developmentally disabled female in bed together, no clothes on. And you say, and the woman he was with is mentally a child. These are the kind of problems. Why not just say if you're biologically male, you have to be housed with the males? And if you're biologically female, we'll house you with the females.
Well, I think you're right there, Lars. I mean, the whole problem here stems from treating this as a civil rights issue as opposed to a mental health issue. And once the left went down that road of treating it as a civil rights issue rather than a mental health issue that deserves the compassion and understanding, but also the social restraints of the larger society. You know, everything that's happening now flows from that basic decision.
Yeah, and that's the way they treat it, too. And by the way, I think they feel that if we say, hey, you've got a mental problem, if you think you're a woman, but biologically you're a man, you have male chromosomes, male DNA, and male plumbing, then you're a male. And you say, but I imagine myself as a female, and now the system is required to go along with that notion just because you say that's what's going on in your brain, even though what's going on in your actual biology is something else. Let me ask you quickly about what happened in Waukesha yesterday, where we have a man who is already a convicted felon, was up on some considerable charges, including one of them involving running over the mother of his child with an automobile, and he bails out on $1,000 bail. And there's been a movement in the last number of years to say, we shouldn't hold these people on high bail. So they talk about eliminating cash bail, which means eliminating bail altogether. You just get out. This guy gets out. He at some point, he may have been involved in a knife fight. He may have been fleeing from the police, but he decides to, he is now accused of deciding to drive his SUV right through a Christmas parade, which has now caused at least 5 deaths and at least 40 people sent to the hospital. And he drove over, is accused of driving over more people with an automobile, and he was let out for an almost nothing bail amount.
Well, right. This is but one notable tragic result of the policy that the left has been inflicting on us over the last several years. I mean, this guy, I was just looking at his rap sheet. It's 49 pages long.
Yep.
Going back to the 20th century. And yet, he, despite the fact, as you point out, that he was facing all these multiple charges, he was permitted 2 days ago to bail out on this minor bail. But this is happening all over the country in woke jurisdictions. It's happening right here in Multnomah County, where between the judiciary and our so-called district attorney, people are being released all the time for serious offenses, as well as many ones that might not be as serious, but still present an ongoing danger to the community. All these people who go on riots like they did Friday night, they aren't being held in custody. They barely have time to take their photographs before they turn most of them loose. And so, I mean, the only question is when the citizens of a given jurisdiction are going to say enough is enough and start to toss these people out of office.
Well, people may find it's indelicate, but for the last several months, Norm, I've been asking how many people have to die, how much blood has to spill before you take this seriously. And I guess so far we're not at the limit just yet. I mean, and this guy seemed, well, go ahead. Do you think we are?
I think even in Multnomah County, even in Portland, I think it's beginning to turn, because the failure of these extremist criminal justice policies is so obvious. I mean, all you have to do is drive through downtown Portland to see it. All you have to do is listen to the news every day. And the people who promote these things are doubling down on them instead of retrenching and instead of trying an alternate strategy. Look at the governor, giving, purporting to lawfully give commutation to all these serious violent offenders. I mean, they're doubling down on it. And next year's an election year, and people just have to say enough.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if they'll make the connection. Because I think a lot of the DAs just figure we can roll the dice. We'll release a lot of criminals, and we know that a huge number of criminals go back right back to the same kind of crime they were committing before. But the question is, do they get caught? Are they apprehended? Are they identified as the bad guy? And they're kind of rolling the dice. And unless you have one that, you know, like Mr. Brooks, now becomes nationally famous for a very, very public crime, you might not ever detect the harm that's happening. It doesn't mean the harm isn't going on. It just means that you don't see the public evidence of it. That's Norm Frank, former district attorney. And Norm, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails. It's a Monday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday, although after the horrific incident in Wisconsin, in Waukesha, Wisconsin, that it just, you look at it and you say, what could we have done to have stopped this? Well, I think there were a number of things we could have done. And unfortunately, if I were to be really blunt about it, I would say to the voters of that county, you elected a district attorney who decided to let a truly dangerous person out on bail. He is now, if he hasn't been charged already, they have recommended charging him with at least 5 counts of murder and probably other charges. And if you say, well, how could we have known that he would be that dangerous? And you say, well, take a look at his rap sheet, which is dozens and dozens of pages long, which include dangerous things like convicted felon in possession of a gun. Even as the New York Times reported, that he was in jail and bailed out on a charge of having run over the mother of his child with an automobile. He is now charged or will be charged with at least 5 counts of murder for driving an SUV right through a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin. I thought we'd talk about that with Amy Swearer, who's a legals fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Amy, welcome back to the program. And what should we make of this? And will America wake up to what is being done to them by those in positions of responsibility, like district attorneys and those who manage our courts and our cops?
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always great to be on with you. Yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think you did a good job of sort of summarizing how we got here. And I think anybody with, you know, half a mind and the ability to use logic and reason can look at that and say, well, wait a minute, how is this individual out on the streets? I mean, we have a man who just this month with open felony charges, violent felony charges, was out on bail and then gets picked up and charged again for, as you noted, trying to allegedly run a woman over with his car. He's released on, he's only $1,000 bond. He's, you know, only held for about 2 weeks. He's let out. And lo and behold, here we have an individual with a long history of being an unrepentant and incorrigible violent offender who goes out and commits more violent crimes. And on the one hand, you know, it's easy to say, well, no one could have predicted he would commit this specific offense in this specific way. But, you know, when you look at an individual with this long history of violence, I think it's pretty easy to look at this and say, yeah, there was a high likelihood he was going to commit some act of violence against someone somewhere while out, because that's sort of his MO at this point. You have to question, how does he get out on that low of bail? $1,000 bail is incredibly low.
And by the way, Amy, I'm not a lawyer. You're the legal fellow. But I know that bail is legally allowed to be used to make sure you show up at court to face the charges of which you're presumed to be innocent until and unless proved guilty. I get that. But should we also use bail to say when we have an especially dangerous person who, based on his past acts and repeated past acts, is likely to go out and hurt more people, should we be able to use bail to make sure that person isn't allowed to run around and hurt more people?
Right. Well, so very quickly, I mean, sort of the point of cash bail, the argument for it has always been just that, you know, that people who have skin in the game are more likely to show back up because they don't want to lose that bail money. Now, the reality is, are there, you know, arguments to be made that we can reform bail, that this really puts poor people at a disadvantage? Yeah, of course there are good faith arguments for that, and they're reasonable arguments. But the problem becomes, what do we do with violent offenders? You know, this idea of, look, if someone is truly a danger to society, does it matter whether or not we think they're willing to come back or whether or not we think they can pay that amount of bond. Shouldn't it be if we think that they're a danger, they shouldn't be out in society pending these charges that show them repeatedly to be a danger to society? And so it's just, even if you think bail reform is a good idea, you know, it's unclear to me how this low of cash bail acts either to get him back or to prevent him from being violent. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, and I have a feeling that the local Waukesha and Milwaukee and Wisconsin media and the major media is not going to say, hey, you voters, you chose this district attorney, this John Chisholm character, who's been public about the fact that he says, I want to change the way we release criminals, and I want to make it much easier for them to get out, and maybe take it down to zero. And now today he's trying to sort of CYA cover his backside because he's issued a letter saying, gee, in hindsight, it looks like we let this guy out for too little money. And words to that effect. I've read the letter, and he's saying, we're going to investigate that now. Well, unfortunately, that doesn't bring five people back to life or remove 40 people who ended up going to the hospital because of some really serious injuries that they suffered by being run over by this guy, allegedly.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Again, even if you make the argument, and I think it's reasonable, that no one could have seen him necessarily running through a crowd, I mean, you again have a guy who a year and a half ago was picked up for several felony offenses dealing with, I think it was endangering others with a firearm and being a felon in possession. Now he's got a series of domestic violence-related offenses, including trying to run over the mother of his children. You know, I think it was reasonable to look at this and say, okay, even if we couldn't foresee him running over a crowd of people at a parade, yeah, I think it was pretty reasonable to say, well, nothing has stopped him from trying to attack, you know, whether it's the mother of his children, whether it's other people around him, whether it's law enforcement officers. You know, he was bound, based on his history, to attempt this again. And it just makes no sense. It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. This didn't have to happen.
Amy, when he goes to trial on these five murder charges, and it could be six or seven by the time we're there, because we don't know how many people, unfortunately, are going to lose their lives, will the jury even be allowed to hear, gee, he's accused of just having run over the mother of his children, which I think makes it even, it amplifies it a bit, to say you took an automobile and ran over a human being, oh, and the human being was also the mother of your child, and then within a short period of time, you were accused of using another automobile to just run over random strangers. Will the jury even be told that so they can say, well, maybe this wasn't accidental? You know, he wasn't just fleeing the cops, but he was letting out some of his anger by deliberately taking a vehicle and hitting people. Because as I understand it, when they caught up to him, he had parked the vehicle, and I think he was even parked in front of his own home. It's almost as though he didn't care about getting caught.
Yeah, well, it certainly would come up in any sort of potential sentencing, you know, the fact that he has a repeat violent history. So that would certainly come up as an aggravating circumstance. So, again, when you're dealing with five murder charges, you're likely spending the rest of your life in prison if you're convicted, regardless. You know, what I think is much more likely is that you will see there's been some digging into his social media history, posts that he has made that indicate sort of I think a reasonable interpretation of it is in aggression toward Republicans, at least in favor of a more violent version of the Black Lives Matter movement. It appears that at one point he may have liked or retweeted a post about how to hit protesters and get away with it.
Yep.
So things of that nature, I think, might come in to show motive and intent. But again, it is very early on. I think a lot of this is still being processed. But I will say, having seen the video, it is hard to imagine that there is an argument for someone who speeds up and appears to swerve into people who had multiple options up to that point, you know, to get out of the parade route, to turn onto other streets, that this wasn't intentional in some respect.
Absolutely right. That's Amy Swearer from the Heritage Foundation. She's a legal fellow there. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your calls, including the naysayer calls, on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and we endeavor to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. And your calls are welcome. Our Twitter poll today, before I get to our naysayer, should Northwest states house transgender men who are criminals in women's prisons? Now, I'd say no to that. Apparently, Washington State is already having the kind of problems you can easily imagine if you house a biological man who considers himself mentally to be a woman in with other women, except that some of these people are even worse because some of them are put in prison because they're serial killers. That's one example. Donna Perry, known as Douglas, formerly known as Douglas Perry, convicted of killing three sex workers, meaning three prostitutes. It's like you have to translate all the news now. Another inmate, Princess Zoe Marie Andromeda Love, formerly known as Hobby Bingham, sentenced to jail after he was found guilty of having sex with a 12-year-old girl, now claiming to be a woman. Andromeda Love got a transfer to the women's prison in Washington State. And an inmate found Andromeda Love in bed naked with a woman who, while she is an adult woman, she's in the women's prison, she is mentally a child. And you can imagine the problems there. So should we house transgender men who call themselves women in the women's prisons? And my answer to that would be no. You can vote any way you like. The Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Xander is a naysayer. And Xander, we love the naysayer on this program. What do you and I disagree about today?
Hey, Lars, not much. You know, give them their own prisons. You know, my heart goes out to everybody in Wisconsin. I am a naysayer on the marijuana topic. Listened to you for a while. It seems that I draw a correlation between guns rights and marijuana rights. Seems to me that you have, advocated.
Is marijuana mentioned in the Constitution?
Well, sir, the idea here is that you seem to want to nitpick certain specific situations.
You mean like whether or not a right is mentioned in the Constitution? Yes, I do tend to nitpick when it comes to the Constitution.
Draw a correlation to that. When people come after you for gun rights issues, you say, well, that's just, one specific issue, one guy not obeying the law. If you change the laws, it's not going to take that one guy.
No, I don't know. Actually, that's not the way I argue that one. If I say if you have a right and it's in the Constitution, you have the right. And unless there's a reason to take it away, when it comes to marijuana, since marijuana is not mentioned in the Constitution, I don't consider it one of the God-given rights that were enumerated and then protected by the Constitution. But Xander, what I brought up earlier, and I'd like you to answer this since you raised the issue, but earlier today I mentioned the state police just had a seizure of 500,000 pounds of pot. The value of which they put at $500 million, half a billion dollars. I mean, we're almost talking Joe Biden kinds of money there. Half a billion dollars worth of pot. And I said, when they legalize pot by a vote of the people, and I recognize and respect a vote of the people, I said, we're going to create a bigger problem. And the people who were in favor of legalization said, no, we're going to get rid of marijuana as a legal problem, because once it's legal and you can buy it from a state-approved store and all that, a lot of the legal problems around marijuana that they thought they saw were going to disappear. And I said, no, it's going to get worse. And now it is getting worse because we have people doing these major grows.
Well, to answer your question would that number go up or down if all of the states were legal? And I would say that number would go down.
Why?
So.
No. Why?
Well, because there is a venue for people transporting across state lines to states that have it illegally. The price goes up for them if they're selling.
And that is true. That is true. But even if legalized,
part of the equation, the overall amount of money that you're talking about goes down. The same kind of thing could be said for guns. If you could buy a gun in one place, you couldn't buy it in another. It would drive up the price.
That's already true. That's already true.
Well, that's why.
If you live in one state, it's very difficult to buy a gun.
I know you want to see a connection there. Double standard,
Xander. I know you want to see a connection there, but there isn't one. But here's what I'd point out: even if it were legal in all 50 states, there'd still be an incentive to grow it and sell it illegally, and it's easy to see. Do you see the taxes that the states of Oregon and Washington collect on pot? If you can grow pot
so
and sell
it,
on,
the baby out with,
go ahead.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't need to, you know, why
I'm
go
not
out
throwing
the
any babies
if it's
out.
Overall,
that's the Democrats.
On the whole, 99% of the people are doing it properly.
No, how do you know that?
Most people are behaving with their gun rights properly.
You're making the classic mistake that I try not to make, where people say, "What? How, the way I behave must be the way most people behave."
I'm trying not to have a double standard based off of, you know, my own
morals.
Well,
but there is no double standard. Marijuana is not a right given to you by God. It's not mentioned in the Constitution.
There wasn't anything said against it or for it in the Constitution. And then later on, there was laws that were put in to prohibit it. So, you know, if we go back to where the Constitution was, there wasn't any rights to prohibit it. So why don't we just watch
the Here's why, Xander. Mm-hmm. You might have noticed the Constitution provides for governments, both the federal government, which makes marijuana illegal and did it legally under the Constitution. The Constitution imagined the creation of a Congress. The Congress writes laws. The Congress then creates the states. The states write laws. Those states and the federal government have a right to write laws based on what they think the people want. If we say we want something illegal, then it's illegal. And right now, marijuana is still illegal at the federal level. And despite all the predictions that it was going to be legalized by the Congress, so far it has not been. This hour of the show brought to you, or this segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails as we head up to Thanksgiving Day. And I am thankful for all of you and for our Radio Northwest network that tries to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. Now, I'll get back to your phone calls in just a moment. I have to admit, if I have a dog in the fight, while I don't do it myself, I'm an unabashed fan of logging. And I think most people should be unabashed fans of logging. After all, most of us live in houses made from wood, dead trees if you are the environmentalist type. And when you use the restroom, there's always that handy roll of toilet paper, assuming that the store shelves have not gone bare of it. So we should be fans of logging. Unfortunately, there are a number of people here in the Pacific Northwest who seem to think that the best way to fix the environment is just simply to never cut down trees. And on that note, Todd Myers joins me, who's the environmental director of the Washington Policy Center. Hey, Todd, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And you and I both share an affinity for wood and living in wood houses.
I actually have the studio desk that I have is a big slab from the interior of a tree. And I'd much rather have this than something made, say, from plastic, which would be oil. That would offend the environmentalists as well. I'm actually not sure what kind of desk they'd want me to have, because almost anything you'd have would probably offend one of the greenies somewhere. But I wanted to ask you about this. You wrote this piece at Washington Policy Center. You said, in a throwback to the timber wars of the 90s, some environmental activists are once again trying to shut down all timber harvests on state land, arguing that the trees will absorb more CO2 if you don't cut them down and plant new trees. Do they understand the flaw in all of that?
Apparently not, because they are openly advocating it, and they argue that, you know, the science is on their side. Now, much of the timber wars in the 90s was about spotted owls versus timber communities. And the environmental communities argued, oh, that's, you know, look, we may stop logging in these communities, but they will come back. They will find other jobs. Well, 20 years later, we know that that's simply not the case. Those timber communities are still struggling and have some of the highest rates of alcoholism, unemployment, suicide in Washington and Oregon. But we also know now, after 20 years of science, that they were wrong on the science. And what the data show is that wood is probably the most environmentally friendly construction material for a variety of different things. As you mentioned, certainly better than plastic, but also better than concrete and steel. And if you really want to reduce CO2 emissions in the atmosphere, you actually support logging, and not just because the trees might otherwise burn, but even if they don't burn, they begin to decay after a while and emit CO2. So I understand that some folks are skeptical about climate change, but the beauty about sustainable harvesting and logging is that it brings both sides together. It doesn't matter what your position is on climate change. Logging is good for the environment and is environmentally friendly, especially compared to the alternatives.
Well, and the only thing you left out, Todd, that I'd throw in, and I'm sure you've done it in other pieces, is the R word, renewable. Because if I use steel, steel's not renewable. There's only so much of it on planet Earth. Even aluminum, which is one of the most plentiful elements in the Earth's crust, will run out of at some point because there's a finite amount. But trees, we can grow trees till the end of time, can't we?
That's exactly right. And that's what you do is that you grow them. And then once the trees, the growth curves start to slow down and they stop growing, then you harvest and you start all over again. And we know this works. The state of California does surveys with the U.S. Forest Service and the Pacific Northwest Research Station, which is there in Portland, and they look at forests and how they're doing. And what they find is that all of the forests that are actively harvested to one extent or another in California are absorbing CO2, except for one category, and that is the forests that are preserved, that are set aside, that are not harvested. They are actually emitting CO2. So the science is very clear that timber harvesting, for a variety of reasons, is the best option environmentally. And it doesn't mean that you, you know, start at one part of the state and clear cut across the other part. In fact, what we do is that we mirror sort of the natural disturbances of forest fire and other things, so that rather than have fire destroy those forests, we harvest and we replant and we have a mosaic of habitat that is consistent with what is environmentally responsible, and we get the wood products and jobs out of it. So it really is a great system that I think people are still stuck, you know, decades old mindset in.
I guess it might be tougher to quantify this, but Todd, Tina and I live in a house that will be 100 years old in about another 17 years. It was built in the 40s. We don't know exactly when. But how do you quantify the fact that when you harvest those trees and you turn them into lumber, whether it's furniture or houses or whatever, for the most part, it's kept around for either decades, in the case of furniture perhaps, or maybe even hundreds of years. I've got an old RCA cabinet in my studio that was made in 1927, so it's 95 years old now. I would expect it to turn 100. And none of that carbon encapsulated in that big 350-pound piece of wood has gone anywhere, and I don't plan for it. In fact, if I take good care of it, it may stay encapsulated for another 100 years. But they're not taking that into account either, are they?
No, and in fact, even after wood product reaches the end of its life, and you throw it away, many landfills will actually grab the wood that would go into the landfill and deteriorate and use that either to power heat. So a company called Seattle Steam in Seattle, which generated electricity, used wood waste to make good use of wood, even when it's discarded, even after it's done. And then the other thing is that wood that deteriorates in landfills puts off methane, and many landfills capture that methane and use that as an energy source. So really, you know, we talk about how Eskimos and other folks use every part of the animal. We use every part of the tree, and sometimes multiple times. So it's really an amazing system that is driven by the value of timber compared to the alternatives. And it's really environmentally friendly. And I think we need to be proud of telling people that. And like I said, get away from this, you know, decades old mindset of the timber wars where it's a lose-lose when we can have a win-win.
So, Todd, can we beat them on the science, or are they going to win this one on emotion?
I think we can, and the best example of that is that two decades ago, when I worked at the Department of Natural Resources, the environmental community was actively saying that we should let forest fires burn. They no longer say that. They now admit that we need to improve the health of our forests and make them less fire-prone. And that happened because over time, we beat them on the science, and they finally admitted it was correct. I think we have a ways to go on this one, but the science is very clearly on our side. Even the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says that sustainable forestry is a good thing. So the science is there. We just have to keep reminding people and let them know. And I think we can win this one in the way that we won the argument about healthy forests.
And by the way, I want to point out to people, if you go to things like, I think it's called Human Progress is one of the Twitter domains for this organization. They point out in the countries that have actually achieved any kind of level of economy, they end up afforestation instead of deforestation. That's Todd Myers. You can find what he writes at the Washington Policy Center. I'll get to your phone calls and emails up next on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network serving the Northwest for 21 years, and you're allowed to jump into the conversation. We call it the best conversation in talk journalism at 866-HEY-LARS. You can also vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com if you're not a fan of Twitter. You can also email, and Calvin emailed in, Lars, I understand you don't care for unions. I wanted to give you a little input from the people that actually work for a union, and I understand why you don't like unions. They shouldn't be involved in politics anyway. I agree with that. But on the other hand, unions keep the standards up in the United States. Without unions, we'd all be living like China, man. Well, here's the thing, Calvin. It's a little hard to support that notion when you look at the numbers. How many American citizens in the private sector are represented by unions? And the answer is 6%. That means 94% of us are not represented by unions, and we have chosen not to be represented by unions. To suggest that the influence of unions through the 6% of private sector workers that once was as high as, say, 30% of private sector workers, but was never a majority, to suggest that that was the thing that drove the marketplace to pay more wages, to offer benefits, doesn't actually make any sense. Because you say, well, hold on, if we pay 6% of the workers more as union workers, that will make sure that all of the other people, the other 94%, will make more money. That doesn't make any sense at all. I'd love to argue the math on that one, but maybe I'll get a naysayer on that. Let's go to Bruce, who's a naysayer. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about today?
I disagree with the notion that you're thinking that, I think I heard you say that marijuana wasn't a God-given right. I'm just kind of wondering who you think made the plant.
Well, I think God made the plant, but God made strychnine too. God made arsenic as well. God made anthrax. God made smallpox. God made everything, but I don't blame him for smallpox, and I don't also consider smallpox to be a right simply because he made it. God also made alligators and wolves and other apex predators, but I don't blame him for those things either. I also don't think of them as God-given rights. Do you?
well, welcome to planet Earth.
Hold on. Where do you find that marijuana, the right to smoke marijuana, is a God-given right?
Well, he gave us all herbs to eat and
and animals to eat as well.
If you want to eat one.
And what did he also suggest that you should render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's?
Yes.
Okay, I'm quoting from the book. So he meant that when you have civilian authority, that we institute governments, and God didn't say don't have governments to take care of a lot of the practical matters. He had his own set of rules, the Ten Commandments, that I believe in, but we've written considerably more rules for how society gets along. Do you think God would have respected the right of citizens to say, we think that one ought to be illegal? Would he have respected that? Well, I'm asking a serious question. Would God have said, if a group of you get together and agree to live in a community, whether the community is a dozen people or 100 people or 330 million, that when the people make a law that says, we're not going to call it one of God's laws, it's not one of the Ten Commandments, they say, this stuff is illegal and we choose not to make it legal, would God have said, respect that law?
Well, yeah, I kind of think that we're going overboard here.
No, I'm asking you a straightforward question. You've suggested that God says, God says, I made this stuff so you can eat it. Do you think he expects you to eat arsenic?
Well, God,
he made that too. Well, he did. He made arsenic. He made a lot of things that he didn't want you to eat or take. I believe that most of the Bible, I've been reading a lot of it lately, but I've read a lot of it throughout my life. He wanted you to do everything in moderation. Do you think that most people who smoke dope do it in moderation?
I think they do.
You think so?
And I'm kind of wondering why you think that there's too much being grown And
because the state of Oregon State Police said that the state, which made it legal, is now seeing $1 billion worth of illegal pot being shipped out of the state. And that kind of business is dangerous. It's dangerous for the rest of us anytime criminal enterprises have something that they can do, and they can do it more readily because it's legal, and they do $1 billion worth of business. We're seeing human slavery in Southern Oregon right now, Bruce. Are you aware of that?
Slavery, I'm not sure.
Slavery, full-on slavery. We had a sheriff on 2-3 weeks ago, and he described it. Illegal aliens are being trafficked up to the Pacific Northwest. They're being used as slaves. And I define slave as you're working on a marijuana plantation for either the cartels or some other illegal group. You are not allowed to leave. You are kept in inhuman conditions, and you are not allowed to demand any more pay than what they choose to give you. I call that a slave. Would you agree that's a slave?
Yeah, I'd feel sorry for him.
Well, no, I didn't ask you if you felt sorry for them. There are lots of people to feel. I feel sorry for Democrats every day. But would you call that a slave? Bruce, would you call that a slave?
I feel sorry for Republicans every day.
Okay, I didn't ask you that. But I think we've run to the end of our naysayer. Let's go to Linda, who's a different naysayer. Linda, we disagree on something. Tell me what it is.
Yeah, hey, Lars. So, yeah, obviously you are a literal interpreter of the Constitution, correct?
I am. Okay. I read the Constitution, and I don't think it's a piece of silly putty like Barack Obama thought it was.
No, that's fine. So where in the Constitution does it say that the government can tell citizens not to use any particular...
Where it provided for the creation of a Congress, which makes laws, that's where it says it. When they wrote the document, they said you will have a Congress, and that the Congress can pass laws. That's where it says it.
Okay, and the Congress is never wrong. I mean, if they
I think the Congress is wrong every day of the week and twice on Sunday. But do you know what the fix is, Linda?
No, what is the fix?
The fix is when you get 218 members of the House and 51 members of the Senate to vote for a bill that legalizes pot, and then you get Dimwit Joe or his handlers to sign that change, the change happens. Do you know where we are on that?
Okay.
In the House, you're at about 2/3 of the number of reps needed to pass that law.
Okay. You asked the last gentleman, do you think that most people use marijuana in moderation? Do you think most people use tobacco or alcohol in moderation?
Yes, I do, because Linda...
You do?
Linda, have you ever met somebody? There are a great many people who have a glass of wine with dinner. Now, do you get drunk from a glass of wine?
No, you don't, but there's a lot of...
Do you know anybody who smokes marijuana and says, I want to smoke dope, but I don't want to get high?
What about tobacco? Is that a thing that is used in moderation? That is legal?
Yes. Yeah. You don't get intoxicated by it, but everybody who smokes dope smokes till they get high. People can often drink a glass of whiskey or a glass of wine, and their intent is not to get intoxicated. That's my argument. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails. You know, I've been waiting for somebody to make a movie about President Biden's son, Hunter, the man that Joe Biden describes as the smartest man he knows. Now, you might wonder about that and about Joe's standards for what he considers smart, because his son Hunter got kicked out of the Navy Reserve for using cocaine. He's fathered children with women whose name one child with one woman whose name he couldn't even remember because apparently she was a stripper and it wasn't her real name. He's done a lot of other sleazy things, but apparently Hunter has brought in millions of dollars for the Biden clan, and I guess that probably forgives a whole host of faults. But the man who is going to help make the movie called My Son Hunter is our friend Phelim McAleer, the man who produced the movie about Gosnell, America's worst ever serial killer. And now he's scored some really high-end talent to be in this movie to portray Hunter Biden, and I assume at some point maybe even Joe Biden, too. Phelim, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Lars.
So tell me about this project, My Son Hunter, and how it came to be, and how hard is Hollywood and are the woke left going to try to kill this thing?
Well, I mean, I always think we sat around for months and months and months thinking someone's going to make the Gosnell movie. I mean, it's a great story. It's about a serial killer. It's about a political hot button. You know, it's got all these elements. It's got the opioid controversy. It's got racism. And no one did it. And we thought, well, we'd better do it. And it's the same thing with the Hunter Biden story. I mean, it's got so much going for it. It's got politics. It's got exotic locations. It's got drug addicts. It's got partying. It's got dodgy dealings. It's got corruption in the Ukraine and China. It's got spying. It's got laptops. It's got leaked emails. And you know what? No one made it because, in fact, they wanted to suppress the story. That was the thing. They tried to suppress the story. And I'm from Northern Ireland. Once I had people... I hear people telling people to shut up. That's when I start shouting. So that's when we decided this movie had to be made. And it's got all the elements of a great, great movie.
Well, I hope, before we get to the stars that you managed to line up, I hope that you keep the script flexible because there seems to be new stuff this last weekend. I saw there's a brand new report from none other than the Democrat Party's House newspaper, the New York Times, reporting that apparently Hunter Biden helped to sew up for the Chinese a supply of cobalt. Now, this was 5 years ago when his dad was vice president. But that's key because now his dad is out promoting electric cars, and you can't build electric cars or the batteries for them without cobalt. And Hunter Biden managed to sew it all up for the Chinese so that America will be, again, under their thumb. Between Joe and Hunter, we're done for.
Well, you know the really sad thing about that, Lars? That story was covered in exactly the same detail by the Washington Free Beacon before the election. And no one else picked up on it. No one else, the New York Times didn't follow it up, didn't, because the idea then was, let's make sure that Joe Biden is elected. So they deliberately suppressed stories about the son of the vice president working with the Chinese government, getting millions of dollars in a kickback to ensure that the Chinese got control of the world's cobalt. I mean, in a dodgy country in Africa. This is, you know, this. If Donald Trump Jr. had done one tenth of this, they'd be making plays, movies, podcasts about it till the end of the year, but to the end of the world. But that didn't happen. They suppressed it back then. They're kind of covering it now. They'll move on. That's why we need to make a movie, because movies change people's hearts. Movies get you emotional. They get you excited. And we've got great actors. We've got a great director. We've got a great story. It's going to be a great, great movie. My,
you know, it's been, I don't know him that well, but I know him through the show. We've had him on. Robert Davi, who a lot of people may remember, is he plays a great bad guy in movies, but he's going to be your director, right?
Yeah. He Robert Davi is a veteran Hollywood actor. He's in The Goonies. He's in Die Hard. He directed The Jukes. He's the director. He's an amazing guy. He's looked at the script and he's made every scene more and more interesting than and the writer, we had a great writer, Brian Godawa, who wrote a movie called To End All Wars, which is, you know, as I say, it's what Angelina Jolie tried to do when she made the movie Unbroken, but she was afraid of the religious aspect of the story. Brian's not afraid. He's told a great story. This is an absurd comedy, right? This is not, you have to laugh at this before you can really take it seriously. And that's what we're doing. So Robert has taken that and is going to make it, you know, even more absurdist. But the more you laugh, the more you're shaking their head going, I can't believe this. So that's what we're doing. We're telling this in a funny, entertaining and accessible way. And the truth is going to get out there. And we've got a great cast as well.
I was going to say, you've got Gina Carano from The Mandalorian, and she's a conservative, or at least that's my read on her from a distance. Again, I don't know her either, but Hollywood's kind of given her lumps, but she's agreed to take part in this project as well. I'm sure that's not going to endear her to the folks at the Academy or the Screen Actors Guild, is it?
No. I mean, they canceled her. Like she was in Disney's Star Wars, The Mandalorian TV series. And because she tweeted something, you know, relatively inane about how conservatives are being treated. It's very funny. She tweeted that the conservatives were being treated really badly and unfairly in America. And so they responded to that tweet by destroying her life and trying to destroy her life and career, proving her very tweet, in fact. So she's a wonderful actress, a wonderful human being. She's going to play a world-weary Secret Service agent.
We got Lawrence Fox, another a British actor who was in the PBS series Victoria. His uncle was Edward Fox, the assassin in The Day of the Jackal. He's got a big family of actors. And then we have John James, who's the kind of revelation of the movie. John used to play Jeff Colby in Dynasty, and he is going to be Joe Biden, and we've done some work with him, and he just looks and acts, and Joe Biden is all-consuming. It's amazing.
Now, you're going to pull out all the stops, and actually, you know what the laptop emails showed, is that Hunter Biden was scoring all these multi-million dollar deals in places like Ukraine, the mayor of Moscow's widow, you got the Chi-Coms involved in it. I don't know if you've cast President Xi in the movie just yet, but these folks, they're all funneling millions of dollars to the Biden clan. Are you going to close the loop there and show that the big guy really was Joe Biden and that the money was flowing, at least some of it, to him?
Totally. I mean, there's an email saying 10% for the big guy. And Tony Bobulinski, his former Hunter Biden's business partner, is very clear and has never been contradicted, saying Joe Biden was the big guy. So this money was coming from all these foreign oligarchs, government, many of them government-backed entities, and some of the deals, Joe Biden got 50%. So this is a wonderful story for journalism, and that's why the journalists, so-called journalists, ignored it, because this story was just going to could have destroyed the Biden campaign in the last election. Talk about an October surprise. So they've got over the idea of an October surprise now by just suppressing these stories.
So how soon do we see my son Hunter?
I think you'll see it first or second quarter next year. Things are moving very fast. But, you know, Hollywood's not going to fund it, and that's, you know, it's crowdfunded. We crowdfunded the Gosnell movie, 2.3 million people, 30,000 people funded this. And we're funding the My Son Hunter movie, too. So people have really come up to the plate and really have helped. But if they really want to see this movie out there, they need to help as well. So we're asking people to help at mysonhunter.com. But next year, you will see this movie. It will be fun. It will be a laugh. And that's why Hollywood hates it.
With some of the top talent out there, Fela McAleer is the producer of Gosnell. Robert Davi, who you remember from The Goonies, is the director. And Gina Carano from The Mandalorian is going to be in it as well. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. That's right, and this segment of the show is brought to you by Marquee Hot Tubs. They'll give you the ultimate hot tub and swim spa experience. Visit online or one of their three physical locations, MarqueeHotTubs.com. Now, a lot of you have some pent-up comments that you want to make, and I'm going to go to them now. On the Radio Northwest Network, Pam, welcome to the program, and thanks for listening on KMED. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. Hey, thank you. Well, you know, I appreciate that you're reading the Bible. I think that's really great of you. The politics, you know, they aren't going to get you into heaven, though, because I know that you're a really staunch Republican. I'm not really sure why that makes
you fight. I don't plan on politics getting me into heaven. I never thought politics were...
Well, you're very political, and you just can't stand the Democrats and...
Well, sometimes they get one right. I mean, John F. Kennedy, who was assassinated on this day in 1963, I have great admiration. But you have to find a Democrat who actually has some common sense. He did. Most of the ones today do not.
Why don't you just talk about people in themselves for their cause and their reason?
Here's why. Here's why.
For a political party that people created, not God.
Well, I understand that. But God expected us to do that. God expected us to make... Hold on. Yes. Because we have free will. That is a tenet of Christianity, that God gave us free will. And we're free to decide to do the right things as he instructed or the wrong things. Now, when you make decisions, Pam, how do those decisions get made? Well, if you have a small enough town, you could say you have a town that has 50 people in it. You could just get together in a meeting and nobody needs to have identifiers for party. And there's nothing that requires identifiers. But if you said, if you're in a community of any size, pick any, like Medford. Medford's a big enough community. You're about 80,000 people, right? You can't have a town hall meeting in Medford. So you have to have people who run for public office. They run as representatives, or they run for the county commission or the city council. Yeah. And if you ask somebody, so I hear that Pam is running for the city council, what kind of candidate would she be? You could sit and describe all your various positions on the issues, or you could say Pam is a staunch conservative and a Republican, or you could say Pam is a loony liberal and she's a Democrat. And it would help.
Well,
it helps
to now. There you go with your insults. But I'm not a liberal. I'm
I don't think it's
and I'm
insulting.
Pick the person for their choice and what they believe in and how they're going to help everybody and all the people,
except for this, Pam. It's not that you want to help people. Republicans want to, and conservatives are all about helping people. It's
see,
the way in which you do
way.
It. Well,
I
can
that when
I persuade
you? Other people down, that's not being
respectful. Can I persuade you, Pam? Pam, if we were walking down the street, but I'll take a shot at it. If you and I were walking, now, are you a liberal or a progressive? Are you?
Well, like I just said, I'm independent. I go for the right causes.
Now, that's just sitting on the fence. That's awfully painful.
Well, not really. I don't agree with that about myself.
Okay.
So if you want to know, I'm telling you, I am not.
Okay, and you told me.
I'm not going to follow Republicans.
You told me, but Pam.
And put down other people.
Pam.
No, I mean, you
well,
really.
Okay. You go ahead
you
and finish up and let me know when you want
to
talk.
Democrat.
I think the Democrats come up with some stupid ideas.
Well, how about just the person comes up with a stupid idea?
No,
that they're a Democrat. Because, see,
well,
I'm
but why do you care about how they're labeled?
Because you label them the label, not for who they are.
Well, no, they labeled
and
themselves.
The other thing is,
hold
know, when
on,
you
Pam,
see those environmentalists,
Pam, they labeled themselves.
Because you
Pam,
live on this earth.
Pam, yes. They labeled themselves. There are people who will tell
no,
you.
No. It's you judging them, and
no,
you have the right to
not.
Do that, I suppose.
Pam,
well,
when somebody.
That's why I don't agree with
I don't think
you
Pam
on
wants.
That.
But Pam, let's talk instead. When somebody says, I'm a liberal, progressive, and I'm a Democrat, they're saying they probably, well, no, but if they, there are people who do that. Maybe you don't, but there are a lot of people who say, I'm a conservative, and there are people who say, I'm a liberal. Now, when you do that.
What you said.
What? What?
So I would go with a Democrat if I thought that they were out, you know, trying to help each other or help the underdog.
Could you give me an example of the Democrats with a
I'll
sensible idea?
I'll give you an
idea.
Example. When you were talking earlier about killing the wolves and what an inconvenience. You know, God put wolves on this earth. You know what they are? They're starving.
He put sharks on
are
this
you
earth,
helping
too.
Wolves? Are you helping
no,
the
No, I don't
underdog?
Want to. I want the wolves to be gone.
Well, that's the
They're
that's
not
what
underdogs.
I'm
they're apex predators, Pam.
No, come on.
They're the Who, they're the biggest,
you,
baddest
you
animal
are not,
in the world. Well,
oh,
they are.
Oh, you poor thing. They
no, I'm just saying they're
like
an apex
can.
Predator, Pam. They don't and a lot of times wolves do you know wolves
because
kill for fun.
They're hungry, Lars.
No.
What would you do if you were hungry?
No. You know what, Pam? Go talk to a rancher. Pam just likes to talk over. Pam, go talk to a rancher about the wolves that kill for fun, who go out and kill a ewe or kill a lamb, and they don't eat any of it. Oh. They just kill the animal because it's fun to kill.
What do you do to help them?
To help them out of their misery? I'd shoot them.
Oh,
if I,
now see, that's the attitude you have, and that's exactly
what's
what
wrong
I'm
with
speaking
that?
Of.
Tell me what's wrong
there's
with getting
there's a lot wrong with that. It's cold-hearted. It's very self-centered.
Well, it is,
care about
but,
anybody
but, Pam,
but you.
I like to have a lot of deer and elk in the woods. And you know what cougar
oh,
and
brother,
wolves
here
do?
You go.
They well, what do you mean? Here we go. Now you're
you
disparaging.
Do.
You haven't even heard
life?
What I said.
What about how they feel?
Well,
when they
I'm going to tell you that for every wolf out there, you're going to lose about 50 to 100 deer and elk. And I'd rather have the deer and elk than the wolf. And what purpose does that wolf serve? Not much of anything. But they do eat a lot of deer and elk, and they wipe out the game animals, and so do the cougar. And I would like to stop that. But, Pam, that was an interesting conversation. Thank you very much. I didn't even know she was a naysayer. You got the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network.